Hello and welcome to the latest episode of The Dugout. I'm Pascal Lemaire and Barney Corker's on the line as we reflect on this week's captivating European action. Loads to look back on, and there's also Premier League talking points and Manchester United going through in the FA Cup. We should probably start with the Champions League, Barnes, but I'll let you have your moment on Liverpool. Amazing night at Anfield. You've still got a big grin on your face, I see. Just talk me through the match.
Yeah, it was absolutely incredible, wasn't it? Just one of the... It was always going to be a pretty special night at Anfield, but the manner the game actually panned out as well was just... It was unbelievable. To go two goals down after 10 minutes, everyone's writing Liverpool off there. Most of Liverpool fans wouldn't have expected to come back in that scenario against the Dortmund side, who was so good. They weren't very good in the first leg, but in that first 10 minutes, they just ripped through Liverpool twice and were so clinical on those two occasions as well. And you felt that that wouldn't be the last of their goals the way they started that match as well. They were at their best. Aubameyang in particular, with his pacing behind, was causing so many problems. But Liverpool, they responded really well to that. A lot of teams would have let their heads drop after conceding two goals, and just Dortmund dampening the atmosphere so quickly at Anfield. But Liverpool fought back really well, and they created a lot of half chance in the first half without hitting the target. Finally did get that goal back in the early stage of the second half, and then Royce obviously looks like he's put the game beyond them again just before the hour mark. But the comeback last 25 minutes, that was just incredible. When Sacco scored in the 77th minute to make it 3-3 on the night, you just felt that this was going to be Liverpool's night. As Thomas Tuchel, the Dortmund manager, said after that, it was pretty much destiny that Liverpool would go on to win it after that. And it did feel like that. It was just one of those really, really special occasions. And I know it is only the Europa League, but in my lifetime, that's right up there by the Olympiacos and the Chelsea semi-final Champions League victories, because it was the atmosphere was special, the occasion was worthy of the Champions League, the opposition were Champions League quality as well, so everything about it just felt like a really special night. Yes, it was in Europa League, but it was such a good night for Liverpool. It's the type of night that does actually, it makes a season, you'll remember that for years and years to come. And I know for the vast majority of this season, Liverpool have been disappointing. Look at their league position, 8th in the table is nowhere near good enough. But that result will stand out, especially if they then go on and win the tournament, which obviously is still a big ask with a couple of tough ties to come, whoever they come up against. Still a long way to go for them, but that result will live long in the memory. It was a fantastic night, a fantastic result, and it does show that Liverpool are moving in the right direction under Klopp, I think.
Yeah, definitely. Like you said, it's one of those nights that will be remembered, you know, for a long, long time. But as you were saying, you know, eighth in the Premier League table, you know, still only through to the semi-finals of the Europa League. You know, they could go out there. Say if they finish where they are now, eighth in the table, that would be, you know, no European football through qualification in the table. Obviously, not winning the Europa League. There's still quite a bit to do, isn't there? There's a lot of obviously, it feels very good there at the moment, but they've still got quite a bit to do this season.
Yeah, certainly. And Klopp will be the last person who needs telling that. He'll know that. One night, if they don't back that result up, then it's pretty meaningless. But it's just the moment, really, they gave the fans there. You haven't really had that moment too often in Liverpool's recent history. We haven't really had that since you get into the latter stages of the Champions League 10 years ago, more than that. So it was just it was so good to have a night like that back at Anfield. Last time we went to the Champions League, which I know it was Europa League, as I mentioned, but it was a Champions League calibre tie. Last time they went to the Champions League, it was so disappointing because you went out in the group stages, didn't live up to expectations after the season before when Liverpool was so exciting in the Premier League. So it was just nice to have that sort of atmosphere and that sort of occasion back at Anfield, because it is one of the great European grounds. It's great European nights there. They've had so many down the years. And it ranks right up there with any of them in my lifetime.
So would you put that, say, above the Gerrard goal against Olympiacos? Would that sort of eclipse that?
Oh, that's a tough one. Obviously, I think because we went on and won the Champions League that year, I think Gerrard still has to be narrowly above that. But the opposition were better last night than they were back in 2004 when Gerrard scored that goal. So. It's right up there. I think I'd still put Olympiacos and Chelsea just above it because it was the Champions League and we went on to win it that year. Both obviously key moments in that run. Maybe it might change if we go on to win the Europa League this season, but it's just behind them. But it's probably third in that list. It was an incredible night.
Okay, we'll come back to Liverpool a bit later because the draw's actually just being made for the semi-finals, but the draw for the Champions League semi-finals has been made. And really interesting ties. Well, it was always going to be interesting whatever ties were thrown up. Manchester City, Real Madrid, Atletico Madrid and Bayern Munich, they were the four teams there. City, they will play Real Madrid at home in the first leg, and then Atletico and Bayern in the other tie. What do you make of those two matches?
Yeah, as you mentioned, though, whatever sequence of ties that came up, I think it was going to be pretty interesting. And It is a good one. I think Atletico Madrid versus Bayern is really intriguing because Madrid, as they showed in the last round against Barcelona, they're the one team I think everyone will be pretty scared of because they have the ability to just, if they can prevent Messi, Suarez and Neymar from scoring, they can prevent anyone from scoring. So they've got the ability to just grind out a result against any team in the world on that day. And I was backing Barcelona to do another treble from the start, and I was quite surprised that he didn't, but by all accounts Atletico Madrid deserved to go through in that tie, and it was another just Simeone masterclass by all accounts. So this can be really difficult. Bayern are now favourites for the tournament now that Barcelona have gone out, so Atletico Madrid can get past Bayern as well, then you'd fancy them against either Man City or Real Madrid in the final, having knocked out the two tournament favourites. It's a really tough route to the final for Atletico, but if they can do it, that's a fantastic way of getting there. Manchester City, Real Madrid, that's another intriguing one. I think that was probably the best chance we had of a really open tie of any of the four teams. I think both sides will look to attack there. Man City already pulled off a bit of a shock against PSG to get through to the last four, and anything can really happen in the last four. It's going to be difficult because we know the qualities Real Madrid have, not least Cristiano Ronaldo, who's in fantastic form himself, as he was to get him through against Wolfsburg. So two really intriguing ties. I would back probably Real Madrid to get through against Man City. I think that's the most clear cut of the two ties. Atletico Madrid versus Bayern, after what happened in the last round, I think that's anyone's guess really.
Yeah, I think City and Real Madrid, I think they both will be quite happy with that tie, because I think after what's been happening and, you know, Bayern's pedigree, having Guardiola in charge, I think Atletico and Bayern would have wanted to draw one of those other two teams. I think City would have been the side that I think the other three would have wanted to draw, just because obviously this is their first time in the semi-finals, and they probably are the weakest team there of the four. But I think as for Atletico, what you were saying there about the Barcelona game, I saw a stat about that night that Atletico managed, I think Messi, he failed to complete a single pass to Suarez, and only managed to pass once to Neymar in that whole game in the second leg, which is an amazing feat from Atletico. The way they defended there, you know, took their chances, won the penalty, clear handball it was from Iniesta as well, and the opening goal from Griezmann, fantastic header as well. And I think it was such a big night for Simeone, I think, because he'd lost, I think it was his last eight games against Luis Enrique. So given that Atletico, everyone says how good they are on the big occasion with their defending and all that, but in the last couple of seasons, he hasn't been able to get one over on Enrique and Barca. So for them to win 2-0 there, not concede, you know, Messi was desperate to score as well. It was over 350 minutes, I think, he'd gone without a goal going into that match. So for them to deny them like that, stop Barca scoring and go through in that way, very, very impressive. And they now come up against Bayern, who, you know, the first leg against Benfica, just 1-0 at home, and the tie was finally poised there, and, you know, Benfica then score early on in the second leg, and it looked like it was really up for grabs, but in the end, Bayern, they just proved too strong, didn't they?
Yeah, they did, and you can't argue against Bayern deserving that win, because they were just utterly dominant. That first Benfica goal came out of absolutely nothing. Bayern had about 75% possession. Benfica had only really been in Bayern's half once before that goal, and it just came on the breaker. It was a fantastic ball forward, but you might say a bit of a hopeful one, just thrown into the right area, but it turned out to be the perfect area for Raul Jimenez to get his head to it, beat two Bayern Munich defenders to the ball. Neuer, who's correctly praised so often, was really at fault for that goal. It was dreadful goalkeeping from him. He should have just come out and clattered everyone in front of him, but he tried to go behind the three players that were also going for the ball in. He was never going to get it in that scenario. So, that, you know, that put the cat amongst the pigeons a bit for Bayern, because they've been in such control, and Benfica suddenly level things on aggregate. And with their home record, it was quite difficult for Bayern to get back into the match. They eventually did it with Vidal. Fantastic finish from him. It was into an empty net, but it was such a difficult ball to strike that one, bouncing on the edge of the box. Mm. And he just smashed it into the empty net. Really good finish from him. And then Benfica's defending from set pieces was puzzling all night. They just, as soon as the ball came in, they all seemed to sort of race out, and that led. You could see Guardiola at half time earmarked that. He'd seen it happening in the first half, earmarked that, because a couple of times in the second half, they just put it to the back post and nodded it back down when they knew all the Benfica players would have rushed out, and that's exactly how the second goal came. And at that point, it really is tie over. You can't see Bayern Munich giving up that. Talisca did give Benfica a little bit of late hope with a late free kick, and then he put another free kick wide even later on, with Neuer pretty much beaten. He got outsmarted because he started going to over the wall as the first one had gone, and then it went to the goalkeeper side, and Neuer was almost beaten again, which would have made things very interesting. But yeah, Bayern, they deserved to go through, and they weren't too convincing. I wouldn't say they were at anywhere near their best really in either leg, but it was never in any real doubt that they'd go through, I think, particularly once they got that second goal on the night. The concern for them would be their away record in the Champions League is really surprisingly bad. They haven't won any of the last seven knockout games in the Champions League. I think they've only won two of the last nine away games in the Champions League, including group games now. So that would be a concern, especially going to the Vicente Calderon when Atletico Madrid are so strong. So that will be a concern for them. But yeah, they deserve to go through. Not at their best. They're not entirely convincing. So while I put them and Barcelona in the last round in a category of their own, I think it's much closer between them and the likes of Atletico and Real Madrid now.
Yeah, and with Atletico, you'd probably say that given the way Barcelona play and the way obviously Guardiola likes his Bayern team to play, it's not that different a playing style. So Atletico will be happy. You know, they're used to putting loads of men behind the ball. They work so well as a unit, their defence and midfield. They work so hard. So I think even though you probably say Bayern probably the strongest team there, you know, I don't think Atletico would be too disappointed with that, because having beaten Barcelona, you know, like we've said so many times this season, Barca, the way they've been playing the last couple of years, arguably the best club team ever in terms of just the amount of talent in that squad, and they've managed to beat them, you know, not comfortably, but they certainly deserve to go through over the two legs. So I think Atletico, really a team to look out for there. And I mean, the interesting thing with going back to Bayern is that if they go through and City win, then it's obviously Guardiola's Bayern against City, the team he's going to in the summer in the final. That could be a very interesting tie. I mean, City, great achievement for them, finally getting to the semi-finals after, you know, quite a few years now of failing in the knockout stages in Europe. And beating PSG, it was a good win. I mean, the game, that was definitely probably the worst tie of the week, that one, City-PSG on Tuesday night. Really not much in that. 2-2 draw in the first leg, that was an entertaining game. But that night, PSG really disappointed me, I thought. You know, didn't create many chances, and Kevin De Bruyne scored a fantastic goal to, you know, seal the win for City. But, I mean, what did you make of that performance from City? Just solid enough on the night?
Yeah, I thought it was pretty impressive. Defensively, there's so many questions. There has been all season without company, but Otamendi and Mangala, they just completely limited PSG. PSG, we know with the talent they've got in attack with the likes of Di Maria, Ibrahimovic, Cavani, they didn't create a good chance until 10 minutes before the end of the match. It was, obviously, that's partly down to poor play from PSG, and like you, I was so disappointed with them. They were nowhere near their best. They were not close to their best in the first leg and got the 2-2 draw, and there was even worse in the second leg. City really deserved to go through over the two legs. Obviously, not many people did give them a chance when the draw was made, because PSG, they're two quite similar clubs with the cash that they've had coming in from the Middle East, and both see the Champions League as the Holy Grail. But PSG, they got more experience, really, at that stage of the competition. It was Man City's first quarter-final, PSG's fourth in a row, but PSG gone out in that stage now 4 years in a row, and they can have no complaints because they bottled it really on the big occasion. Man City deserved the victory. It was a good solid display from them. The pretty much the one prediction, the tie was finally poised after the first leg, but the one prediction everyone was pretty sure of was that PSG would at least score at the Etihad. City wouldn't be able to keep a clean sheet without company and up against the likes of Ibrahimovic, but they were so solid at the back, and they'll be so happy with that performance and obviously that result to get through to the last four of the Champions League, where, as I said earlier, anything can happen, really. And it's an interesting matchup them against Real Madrid. They'll certainly feel that they've got a chance with the players at their disposal. If they can get the likes of Yaya Toure back fit and company back fit by then they've got a strong spine, and, you know, that one's certainly, I would put Real Madrid as favourites, but City will go into that tie thinking they do have a chance.
Yeah, definitely. And just touching on what you said about Toure there, I mean, I saw quite a few people saying, you know, on the night that City, in those kind of games where they need to work hard and to stop teams scoring, I think Toure, they see them as a bit of a hindrance in that team because he doesn't work quite as hard. And I mean, when you've got, say, you know, it means if Toure's not playing, it means you can play sort of De Bruyne in perhaps a more freer role. And he's looked so good since he came back. And it'd be interesting to see, you know, what Pellegrini does with Toure now, because they've played really well in that tie without him there. And certainly be interesting to see what they do. And I mean, Real Madrid, like you say, I mean, I think it's probably the best draw for City, because even though Real, you know, did come back and beat Wolfsburg 3-0 in the second leg there, Ronaldo getting his hat-trick, like you said, he's got an amazing scoring record in the Champions League this season. But, you know, they did lose 2-0 over in Germany, and Wolfsburg had chances at the Bernabeu in that match as well. So I think certainly Real, even though obviously they've got great pedigree in this competition, Ronaldo, he can change games. You know, they beat Barcelona recently as well. I think certainly for City, it probably is the best draw for them. And that tie looks quite even. I mean, City would have preferred the second leg at home, I'm sure. But I certainly give them a chance in that game. And I mean, I think if they'd drawn Atletico or Bayern, I wouldn't have really given them much of a chance in any of those games. But I think against Real, they certainly do have a really good chance to get through.
Yeah, and if they had drawn Bayern, you've got to assume that Guardiola's already started looking into that whole Man City squad, and he'd know all the players back to front, you'd think, by now. So you'd think he'd be pretty well set up to face them. And as you mentioned earlier, Atletico Madrid, if Barcelona can't beat them, you couldn't really see Man City beating them. So I agree with you there. It's probably the best draw they could have got. And there is the Ronaldo factor for Real Madrid. He can just win a game single-handedly, as he did in the second leg in the quarterfinals to get them through. So there's nothing really Man City can do about that. You can try and limit his influence, but if he's really on his game, you know, you're going to have limited success doing that, because he's such a top-class player. Man City, though, they can still improve from their performances over PSG, which will be the positive for them. The likes of Aguero obviously missed the penalty against PSG. He was a bit of a threat, but he wasn't his usual clinical self in front of goal. So if they can get him firing again, he hasn't really been at top form for quite a while now for City. When he is on top form, he is one of the best strikers in the world. So if they can get him on top form, De Bruyne behind him, as you rightly said earlier, has been superb since coming back from injury. If they can get those players on top form, then they certainly have the ability to hurt a Real Madrid defence, which has looked shaky at times this season.
Yeah, definitely. I think presuming most people would probably pick the winner to come from the tie between Atletico and Bayern, whoever gets to the final in Milan. And for me personally, I mean, Bayern are the current favourites with the bookies, you know, just ahead of, and Real Madrid second favourites. I'm really surprised Atletico third favourites, because for me, I think you'd have to make them favourites for the competition, given just how they restricted Barcelona in that match. They've obviously got to the final recently as well, when they lost to Madrid, lost to Real Madrid in that derby final. And, you know, we could have another derby in the final this year, but for me, Atletico are favourites. What about you?
Yeah, it's so difficult between Atletico and Bayern. I think Atletico deserve to be at least second favourites. Bayern, on their day, they've got the ability to cut any team apart, even Atletico Madrid. And the result against Barcelona is worth remembering that Barcelona have already beaten them three times before that this season. So Atletico Madrid are certainly beatable. It's just a case of whether they can limit the Bayern. If Bayern have another sort of off day like they did against Benfica, well, maybe not an off day, maybe that might be a bit harsh on them, because they did get through in the end, but aren't at their very best against Atletico, and Atletico are at their very best, then you're back Atletico to come through. But I would say the winner would come from that tie. I can see Atletico, if they came up against either Man City or Real Madrid in the final, being able to stifle them. And if Bayern came up against Man City or Real Madrid in the final, I could see them being able to just outclass them. So I would predict the winner to come from that tie.
Just a quick question on Lewandowski. He was obviously benched in that second leg by Guardiola. Was he really ineffectual in the first game? Is that why he was benched?
It was one of the quietest games I've seen him have, but he wasn't the only one in that first leg. Müller was pretty quiet as well. There were reports from Germany that came out during the match, actually, that he had been in a car crash on the Sunday, which wasn't too serious, but that might have been a reason behind him being on the bench. But certainly a surprise from Guardiola to leave him out. He did come on for a bit of a cameo late on, but yeah, it was a big surprise to see. He was pretty ineffectual in the first leg, and he hasn't been at his best recently. I think it had gone three games without scoring, which for the vast majority of players is not exactly a drought, but for Lewandowski in the form he's been in this season is. But you'd expect him to come back in for these big games, especially against Atletico Madrid, where it's so hard to score against them. You've got a player who scored 44 goals in, I think, his 49 games for club and country this season. So you'd expect him to come back in. It was a surprise for him to be left out, but in the end, it didn't really hurt Bayern, because Müller played up front and got the goal.
Yeah, so they look like two great ties. They're taking place on the 26th and 27th of April. And then the 3rd and 4th of May, so that they look really good. But let's move on to the Europa League draw. Just been made. You don't know what it is, so here you go. Who would you have wanted to draw as a Liverpool fan out of the four teams?
Well, I think probably every tie is going to be a tough one, but I think I'd probably prefer Shakhtar. Obviously, they did really well against Braga, thrashed them in the quarterfinal 6-1, but Braga aren't their strongest opponent, so I probably would go for Shakhtar. Sevilla got such a good record in this competition recently, and Villarreal are doing well in La Liga this season, so Shakhtar would have been my preferred choice, I think.
Okay, so the first tie that came out was Shakhtar versus Sevilla, and then Villarreal-Liverpool. So Liverpool have got the second leg back at Anfield. Villarreal came out first in that one, but initial reaction to those two ties?
Yeah, they sound good again, like the Champions League one. The Europa League's been so good this season. There's been a lot of Champions League caliber matches taking place. Think back to Liverpool United, Dortmund, Tottenham, and then obviously Liverpool Dortmund in the quarterfinals. And a lot of the teams, Sevilla did really well in the Champions League this season, only finished third in their group behind Man City and Juventus, I think it was. So they're amongst the best teams in Europe as well. So there's a lot of good teams left in the tournament. I think Villarreal and out of the quarterfinals, Villarreal and Shakhtar, they had the two easiest quarterfinals and both went through pretty emphatically, scoring six goals over the two legs. The one team I would have wanted to avoid most with Liverpool is Sevilla. So, you know, Villarreal, they're probably the lesser of those two Spanish evils left in the competition. So, yeah, I'm relatively happy with that. Second leg back at Anfield, get the crowd going again. It should be another good occasion there. So, yeah, I'd back Liverpool to get through that one.
Yeah, certainly. And I think they are favourites with the bookies to go through, having, you know, Borussia Dortmund, they were the tournament favourites going into that match. And for Liverpool to beat them the way they did was very, very impressive. And I mean, like you said about Shakhtar and Villarreal, six goals in both legs, but the opposition in both of those matches wasn't really up to scratch. I mean, you talk about some of the Champions League calibre teams we've seen, but I don't think Braga or Sparta Prague really were up to that standard. I mean, I think I saw a stat about Prague that their conversion rate was so good. They'd hardly created any chances in previous matches, and they were somehow scraping through. And in the end, Villarreal were just way too good for them over the two legs. Bakambu, he looks like a real star. He's scoring loads of goals for Villarreal at the moment. 6-3 on aggregate. That was convincing. But, I mean, Shakhtar, that was the really impressive one. Because Braga, I think they were unbeaten in five home games going into the first leg. Shakhtar go and win their 2-1. That wasn't a great game, but, you know, Shakhtar just about did enough. But then the home leg yesterday, it was weird because Braga, they started the match well again. You know, looked quite comfortable. Plenty of possession. Couldn't really create many chances. They should have had a penalty, Braga, early on, which would have given them a 1-0 lead and obviously put them in a really good position. Referee didn't give it. It was a bad decision. He gave a corner. And then about 10 minutes later, Shakhtar themselves got a penalty, which the referee did give. Stuck it away. And from then on, it was way too easy for the Ukrainian team. 4-0 winners on the night. Braga kind of gave up. And, you know, Shakhtar's wins, the three wins they've had in the knockout stages, 3-0 over Schalke, 4-1 over Anderlecht, and 6-1 against Braga. I mean, it's not the same type of competition, as you say, that Liverpool have beaten, for example, but still very, very, they look like a very confident team. And I think that's not an easy draw for Sevilla, who, you know, like we've said before, they won this competition the last 2 years. They love the Europa League, but they needed to come to a penalty shootout against Bilbao. That was a really interesting tie. Bilbao, they had chances to win it in extra time, couldn't take it. And then Sevilla just held their nerve in the penalty shootout. And I mean, it's a really hard one to call, I think. All four of those teams, it's really, really difficult. Liverpool just favourites, but you'd probably say any of them could win it.
Yeah, and if you're going on solely on this season, you'd probably say Sevilla probably fourth favourites out of them, because the performance in La Liga this season, they're struggling to get into the European places, but their record in this competition is so impressive. No team's lifted the trophy, including the UEFA Cup, more often. They've got it four times now, as you say, two of which in back-to-back years, and the last 2 years looking to become the first ever side to do it 3 years in a row. I think Athletic deserve a mention, because to take Sevilla to penalties in that game, when Sevilla had won the away leg 2-1, Sevilla had won 11 straight Europa League home games in a row before that one, so to win 2-1 there, it's a really good effort from them. But obviously, as you mentioned, Sevilla come through on penalties, and they do look unstoppable, really, in this competition. It's so hard to beat them. They really like it. As I say, they dropped in from the Champions League. They impressed in the Champions League as well, so they're going to be a tough team to beat. Shakhtar, obviously no one's going to look forward to going to Ukraine, so that's going to be a difficult away game for Sevilla, especially. Really is an intriguing semi-final draw that I think any of the four teams left in the tournament are capable of winning it.
Yeah, they look really good. I think excellent ties. Like you said, the Europa League has been not a breath of fresh air, but certainly compared to some recent years where, you know, this been some minnows maybe get further into the competition, and some of the ties haven't been great. This season's Europa League has been, you know, games like last night, we had penalties in Sevilla, obviously amazing what Liverpool did at Anfield. So it's certainly been a very good year for the Europa League, I think. And like we said, the Champions League, those ties look excellent as well. So we're really looking forward to those games later this month and then into May as well. But let's move on now. Let's come back to England. Before we go to sort of last week's Premier League games and looking ahead to this week, let's just quickly touch on the FA Cup replay in midweek, Manchester United against West Ham, and Louis van Gaal, I mean, not necessarily saving his job in that one, but, you know, United, it was an impressive win on the night, to be fair, given that West Ham, you know, they drew 3-3 with Arsenal. That was an amazing Premier League game at the weekend, and I think West Ham, it was such a big night for the club. I got a couple of West Ham fans on Twitter, and they were saying this is our biggest game of the season, we have to get to Wembley. They've had an amazing campaign, West Ham, their last season at the Berlin ground, but they did disappoint in that match. And, you know, a good result for United, but really disappointing for West Ham.
Yeah, and it was a good performance by United, by all accounts, as well. And certainly a lot of positives to take from that. Rashford getting another goal, a 6-11 since he's broken into the first team. So he continues to score. He's been a breath of fresh air, really, for United side, who were labouring a bit. And it's just results like that, really, that... You mentioned not saving Van Gaal's job, but he could do a rescue job if he manages to pick up a bit of silverware and then maybe get into the top four, which is obviously looking a bit of a tall order after the defeat to Tottenham last weekend. Then that might be enough to salvage a job, and it would be a good rescue job from where United have found themselves for much of the season. The thing with United at the moment, though, is they keep getting these good wins, which maybe think... make people think there's brighter times ahead, but then they fall to a disappointing defeat. It's happened recently in the Premier League, you know, they've beaten Arsenal and Watford and then lost to West Brom and Liverpool in the Europa League, and then they've gone and beaten Man City, they've beaten Everton, then they lose to Tottenham in the Premier League. So it seems to be, you know, one step forward, one step back for them at the moment under Louis van Gaal. They don't seem to be making too much progress. To get into the FA Cup semi-finals is a big thing for them, though. They haven't won the competition since 2004, which is a long, long time for a club like them, considering when they lifted that trophy in 2004, they became the most decorated club in the competition's history. So it's a long time for them to go without it. It'll be important for van Gaal to lift a bit of silver, certainly give him a bit of argument for staying in the summer. But you know, there's still a long way to go in the semi-finals, and you never know with this United side, because they've been so unpredictable all season. You don't know if they can have an on day or an off day, really. And whoever they come up against, should they get through to the semi-finals in the final, will still fancy their chance against United, because it's not the United of old, really. You go into that game, they've lost their fear factor, and anyone will fancy their chances now against them.
Yeah, certainly. And I think, just going back to what you said about Rashford, it was a superb goal, the way he dropped his shoulder, cut inside, curled it right into the top corner. Fantastic goal. But the interesting thing now for Van Gaal is, you know, Rooney came off the bench right at the end in that game. He's back, he's fit again, Rooney now. And obviously the only reason Rashford ever really got a chance is because of injuries to Rooney and some of the other senior players. And Rashford's burst onto the scene, only 18 years old. And I think Manu, they've won every single game that he's scored in as well. So he obviously... He has been playing a key part for them the last couple of months. But it's going to be interesting now to see what Van Gaal does, because Rooney's the captain. You know, you would expect him to play. But where does he fit in then if Rashford's playing well? You've obviously got Martial, who still looks very bright in most games. It'd be interesting to see his selection there. And at the other end of the pitch, you know, even though West Ham largely disappointed, they got that goal back. And then they really started to pile the pressure on United at the end. And it was David De Gea to the rescue again. I mean, the amount of times this season... that he has saved them, the amount of key saves he's made, and certainly saves that, you know, I mean, a lot of goalkeepers, you know, they make saves, but you think, right, he probably should have made that save. But the amount of saves De Gea makes where you think that was more likely to go in than him to save it. There was one against West Ham where it took a deflection and he somehow stuck his leg out and managed to divert it over the bar. I really don't know how he did it. And you just wonder, where do you think United would be if, say, they had just like a more average goalkeeper between the sticks?
Well, yeah, it's a worrying thought for United. Obviously, De Gea didn't start the season in goal because of the whole saga with Real Madrid. And if they had lost him in the summer to Real Madrid, then for me, I think they'd be in and around mid-table, because he does save a significant amount of points a season for them. And not just points, as you mentioned, getting through to the FA Cup without him in such good form. They might not have been in the semi-finals of the FA Cup now. So he really is priceless to United. I think there's going to be a lot of people... maybe put Kasper Schmeichel in their team of the year at the end of the season. But for me, I think the goalkeeper's got to be De Gea, because even though United as a team and as a club have had a really disappointing season, De Gea has been in superb form as well. And as you mentioned, where they would be without him is a worrying thought for United. They'll be desperate. I think Real Madrid, with their transfer ban this summer, are going to splash a bit of cash, maybe, if they're still allowed to sign transfers and the appeal doesn't get rejected before then. If they come back in for De Gea, it's going to be nervy times for United, because he's their most important player now, and I think if they lose him, they could be in a bit of trouble.
Definitely, yeah. And just one other player we haven't really mentioned at all, really, is Fosu Mensah. He, like Rashford, has come in, a very young player, and he has looked really good. I mean, obviously, it's just been a short sample period, but I mean, he's looked excellent, I thought. And you know, those three goals Spurs scored in 6 minutes at the weekend, they all came... I mean, I'm not saying it's directly linked, but they all came after he went off. And he's looked really excellent for them. I mean, what have you made of him, his performances?
Yeah, he's been impressive. And it's Van Gaal, to his credit, has brought a lot of youngsters into side, and they've done well. Obviously, that is because of the injuries. I don't think it was his intention ever to blood all these youngsters in the team, and his hand has been forced. But the youngsters he has brought in have applied themselves really well, and they deserve credit for that. Rashford, obviously, making most of the headlines, but as you mentioned, Fosu Mensah has made a really bright start to his United career. It is still very, very early days. He's still got a lot to prove, but certainly promising signs. And even other defenders, the likes of Borthwick Jackson, has looked pretty good when he's played as well. So there are positives from this season for United, even if they don't win the FA Cup, even if they don't get into the Champions League. The fact that they've got a few youngsters with a bit of Premier League experience under the belt who actually look like they could have a bit of promise about them is certainly a positive for them.
Definitely, yeah. And obviously now they've gone through, they face Everton at Wembley later this month in the semi-final. And I mean, I live with an Everton scene ticket holder, and he said he would have rather faced Man United in that game than West Ham. And I mean, but the problem is for Everton, they've just looked really bad recently. They played that same night on Wednesday. They've got a couple of games to catch up on in the Premier League. They go to Crystal Palace, who, you know, they did beat Norwich at the weekend, but that was their first win in since Christmas, I think. So, and Everton going there, they had McCarthy sent off, 0-0 draw there. Lukaku let me down. I triple captained him on fantasy football. Really let me down this week. But as for Everton as a team, it's just their season's tailed off so badly. And the thing is, after that match, Roberto Martinez, he said, you know, I thought we did. It was an incredible performance for us to, you know, get a draw there after we'd had a man sent off. And that's not what you want to hear really for a team. You know, you look at their squad, the quality they've got there, and you go into a side like Crystal Palace who have been struggling so much. They're down in 16th in the table, and for Everton to go there not score, even having a man sent off, it's just been, I mean, it has been so disappointing for them in recent weeks, hasn't it?
Yeah, and it's now five league games without a win for them. The one thing about them is they do have, you mentioned the quality in their squad, they do have the quality in their squad to pull off a result like that, and they've usually come away from home. But even that has been, they've had three away Premier League games in a row now, and they haven't played particularly well in any of them. You mentioned the United FA Cup game coming up. The game, the Premier League game at Old Trafford, that was a really poor game. We said it was quite unpredictable because you've got two teams, you don't really know what form of them is going to turn up, because they've been, United have been poor at times and decent at times, Everton have been exciting at times and then really poor at times. So that was a really poor game. Hopefully the FA Cup semi-final is a bit better than that. But Everton, as a team, they need to improve. There's obviously the signs popping up now that they want Martinez out, and the pressure certainly is starting to build on him. It has been such a disappointing season for them, and there have been flurries of times where they've looked good and looked capable of scoring so many goals, and they're amongst the highest scorers in the league, to be fair. But for them to be down in 12th with the squad at his disposal is simply not good enough, really.
Not at all, no. And just looking back to some of those other results last weekend in the Premier League, I mean, probably the biggest one maybe at the bottom of the table was Palace-Norwich. And I mean, it was a huge win for Palace because, like I said just a few moments ago, that they hadn't won a game since Christmas. They'd been, you know, plummeted from about 5th in the table all the way down to 16th. And I mean, that win for them, they're up to 38 points now, 7 clear of Norwich in 17th. And I know we've sort of said it a few times in recent weeks, but I mean, it definitely looks now a three-team race for those two relegation spots. And I mean, this weekend, another huge game for Norwich. They've already played Newcastle a couple of weeks back, beat them, obviously went to Palace and lost there, and now they host Sunderland at home, the team just below them in the table, 4 points behind. I mean, Sunderland do have a game in hand, but I mean, that game, it really is do or die for those two teams in that one, isn't it?
Yeah, it's absolutely huge. Allardyce described it as a must-not-lose rather than a must-win, which gives us an indication of what he's going to go into that game. And you can see his thinking there, because that game in hand is so big. But that game in hand doesn't come until the penultimate game of the season, and it's against Everton, who, as just mentioned, are quite unpredictable, so you don't really know what you're going to get with them. So I think if I was Sunderland, I would go for the win there. So not only, obviously, to get the points on the board, but it would really kickstart the end of their season. To get a victory over their closest rivals, move within 1 point with that game still in hand, it would give them a huge psychological boost. And it's what's happened the last few seasons. They pick up a win and they go on a bit of a roll at the end of the season. Obviously, it's a bit of a blow that it comes at Carrow Road for them rather than at the Stadium of Light. But if I was Sam Allardyce there, I think my main priority would be going there and getting a win, because as you mentioned, it is a bit do or die for them. I think if Norwich win that match, then it's over. I think Sunderland and Newcastle going down, Norwich are staying up. So you can see why Allardyce is thinking the main priority is not losing. But if they can get a win there, and I think they should push for a victory, maybe try and sneak a 1-0 or something, then it gives them a huge boost. And then suddenly, from being 4 points behind, I would put Sunderland as probably favourites to stay up if they can get a win at Carrow Road.
Yeah, absolutely massive. And given how the table looks, you'd probably even say maybe it might just be between Norwich and Sunderland, because it hasn't worked out for Mr. Benitez at Newcastle, as you know, another defeat, 3-1 at Southampton last weekend. I mean, they do also have a game in hand on Norwich, but it's 6-point gap now, and you can't see them clawing it back. There's no reason to think that, really. They've been poor for a long time now. Benitez has come in, hasn't really made a difference. They look down. I mean, Villa, they're not quite gone, confirmed as relegated yet, but they will be this weekend. I mean, unless they go and win at Old Trafford, which you can't really see happening. But so Villa down, but I mean, it really looks like Newcastle are going to join them.
Yeah, it does. They've only got 1 point from the last seven games, which is pretty diabolical form when they really needed an upturn in form. And you look ahead to the games coming up, they've got City and Liverpool in the next two after this weekend against Swansea, so you can't see them getting too many points from there, and time really is running out of them. Crystal Palace, Aston Villa in their two after that, you'd maybe see them getting a few points from there, but then they finish the season against Tottenham, and when you consider their 6 points behind, and that game in hand they've got against Norwich does come against Manchester City, who are still fighting to secure their Champions League place as well. Things look pretty bleak for the Newcastle. I think that result was almost the final nail in the coffin last weekend against Southampton. It's looking really not looking promising at all for them. As for Aston Villa, they could even be down before they play United if Norwich get anything against Sunderland in the early kickoff. So I think that's just a case of the inevitable being confirmed this week. The 15 points from safety, 15 points left to play for, dreadful goal difference, and it's hard to argue against them deserving their place amongst the Premier League's worst ever teams. I think only two other teams have ever got a lower points tally. They've only won three games all season. Eddie Howe last week after Bournemouth beat them described it as a toxic atmosphere. It's a really sorry state of affairs at the club at the moment, and it's inevitable that they're going to go down this weekend, and it's just really confirming what we've all known for a long time.
Yeah, definitely. Villa, obviously never been relegated in the Premier League era, but they are going to go down this weekend. Surely there's no way they're going to go and win at Old Trafford, and like you say, it could already be confirmed by the time they kick off there. And enough doom and gloom, let's go to the top of the table. Leicester again winning, Vardy ending his little mini drought with two against Sunderland. They can't be stopped.
They can't be stopped, and what a time. Everyone's talking about the pressure that is building on their shoulders every game that goes by, but they answer every question, and you know, they've strung together their best run of form for 52 years now when they really needed it most. Haven't gone five top flight games in a row since 1963-64. There's been a bit of talk this week that they have been top of the table with five games left to go and absolutely collapsed at the end of the season back in the 60s when I think they drew one and then lost their final four games of the season and ended up finishing fourth. But it was a lot tighter then. Now they've got a 7-point gap on Tottenham. They can afford a bit of a slip-up, but they just don't seem like happening. It doesn't seem like happening at all. They didn't look like losing that game against Sunderland. It was pretty tight for the first half. Very nervy affair, as you can imagine, with so much on the line for both clubs. But then Vardy got that goal in the second half. And then another one later on, 2-0 perhaps, maybe flattered Leicester a little bit. It looked like being yet another 1-0 win, but it was just Sunderland didn't really look like scoring themselves apart from one glorious, glorious chance for Rodwell, which they might look back on. If they look back on that and it turns out that might have cost them some valuable points to stay up, that's a huge, huge moment. It was such an absolute sitter. He had to score there, so to put that over the bar, really disappointing, and obviously has a huge effect at both ends of the table. But that was the only really time Sunderland really looked like scoring, and for Leicester now, five clean sheets in a row, first time they've ever done that in the top flight, 11 in the last 15, having only kept three in their first 18 games. It's just incredible the way they've not only carried on winning but changed their style of winning. They've started the season just outscoring opponents, now they're just keeping things tight at the back. And throughout the first half of the season, when we were saying that they have one of the worst defensive records in the league despite leading the way, you know, now the only two teams have conceded fewer, and it's pretty close between them and United, who've got the second best defensive record in the division now. So really is a remarkable story, and they look like doing it now. I don't think there's too much doubt. 7 points clear of five games left with the form they're in. I can't see them throwing this one away now.
Definitely not. And you'd say that Spurs are the only team that can really catch them now, because Arsenal last weekend, that 3-3 draw at West Ham, it was an incredible game there. You know, Arsenal going 2-0 up, because it was a big game for West Ham. You know, they've faltered in recent weeks, and for their sort of top four hopes to sort of be reignited, they really needed to win that game, and they fell 2-0 down. Iwobi again impressing. You know, he set up the first two goals with two very nice passes. He's looked excellent the last few weeks. But then West Ham, I think Andy Carroll either side of half time, it was a 10-minute hat trick from him. Really impressive from Carroll, and well, he just completely bullied the Arsenal defence, really. But then Arsenal did manage to come back and get a draw. But they're now 13 behind Leicester with a game in hand. So say if they win that, it's 10. But that's too big a gap to claw back, surely. But you know, Carroll, he looked so good in that match. But I think just quickly going back to United, that was something they did so well in midweek, because Carroll, he looked so dangerous against Arsenal, but he barely did anything against Man U in that FA Cup game, apart from he got one free header and that led to Tompkins. He sort of headed it back across and Tompkins scored. But I think United defended so well there. But as for West Ham, you know, it wasn't a win for them. They're now 5 points behind Man City in that race for fourth. And given how they've sort of tailed off in recent weeks, three draws in a row they've had, you'd probably say their top four charges over?
Yeah, I think so. I don't see Man City giving up 5 points over the last six games of the season. And even if they do slip up, Manchester United are a bit better place to take advantage of that. It's disappointing for West Ham because they've had such a good season, and I think they deserve European football, whether that comes in Europa League. If they finish sixth and the FA Cup works out that way, then they can get it. Then I think they deserve European football to take into their first season at Olympic Stadium. But considering they've got a 5-point gap to come up, and this weekend they're away to Leicester City, I can see them dropping more points there. Man City perhaps going a bit further clear. Manchester United almost certainly going further clear at home to Aston Villa, which is a match you'd expect them to win. I think they've only lost one of their last 40 Premier League meetings with Villa, so their record against them is incredibly good. So you'd expect them to get 3 points there. You'd expect probably West Ham to lose more ground in that top four race. So it is a shame because they look like pushing all the way to the end at one point, but whatever happens, it's been a really good season for them.
Yeah, just looking at some of the other matches this weekend, I mean, say at the start of the season, if you'd been given this set of fixtures and said, you know, what's the standout match on this list, you would have said Chelsea-Man City. But, you know, Chelsea are 10th in the table, Man City 4th, they're 15 points behind Leicester. So that game doesn't carry the gravitas that maybe it would have done had the season's gone to plan for those two. But Chelsea, I mean, you know, disappointing. Obviously, we talked about Conte getting confirmed last week, but they went to Swansea and lost there. Another disappointing performance. And I mean, 10th in the table for Chelsea. I mean, the fact that Bournemouth, you know, a team, you know, quite a small club who came up last season from the Championship, first ever top flight season, Bournemouth only 3 points behind Chelsea. That's incredible, isn't it?
It is. And the thing about Chelsea, ever since Gus Hiddink came in, obviously he stopped the rot with the losses, and that Swansea defeat was his first defeat in the league. But far too many draws for them to really push on. If they had turned some of those draws into victories, they might actually be up there pushing for the European places, because Hiddink he's done a pretty good job stabilising the club. But you'd expect more from them. I think as soon as Mourinho left, he lost that game to Leicester in December and then got sacked after that. I think at that point it was season over for Chelsea, and it was just a case of getting through to the end of campaign and then building for next season. The most disappointing thing about the Swansea game is you thought this is your first chance to really impress Antonio Conte coming in, first game since he'd been confirmed, and it was just such a lacklustre display from them. They showed so little. There was a lot of injuries, missing a lot of key players, likes of Terry, Cahill, Hazard, Costa. They were all missing for that game, so they were a bit of a weak inside, but still, it's a really disappointing display. Big win for Swansea, obviously getting to 40 points, and it looks like they're safe now, and another feather in the cap of Francesco Gridlin, who wants the job beyond the end of the current season. But for Chelsea, that was a really disappointing performance and result.
Definitely, yeah. So plenty of good games again this weekend. Just before we finish, we're just going to touch on La Liga quickly, because it's got very interesting all of a sudden over in Spain. You know, a couple of weeks back we were saying Barca have wrapped it up, it's all done there, but they've now drawn and then lost their last two in a row. 76 points they've got after 32 games. Atletico, who they obviously just lost to in the Champions League, 3 points back. Real Madrid, 4 points back. It's back on, isn't it?
It is back on, and it's just come out of the blue. Barcelona were on such fantastic form, that Spanish record, I think it was 39 matches unbeaten in all competitions, but then they've only won one of their last five now in all competitions, two defeats in a row. They went into that weekend match against Real Sociedad, they got a dreadful record at that ground. They've only, don't think they've won there since 2007, so another defeat. You know, it seems to be their bogey ground. It probably wasn't the best ground they could have gone to in their first league game after El Clasico as well. So only 1 point now from their last nine available in the league. It's opened the door right up for Atletico Madrid, and they'll keep on grinding out those results. You know they will. And Real Madrid, they won't give up hope just yet either. They're 4 points behind Barcelona. So it is getting interesting, the closing stage of the season. I think Barcelona the quality in their side, you'd expect them to return to winning ways probably this weekend against Valencia at home. You'd see that as a home win. Valencia don't have too much left to fight for this season, so you gotta back Barcelona to return to winning ways, but they've certainly opened the door and given the Madrid clubs a bit of hope in the closing stage of the season.
Yeah, I think you'd probably say that even though with that dip in form, you would expect them to still go on and win the league, especially because, you know, Atletico and Real, they are still going in the Champions League, and that's obviously huge for them as well. Barca now don't have that, you know, European burden. So you'd probably say they're still favourites to win it, but, you know, Messi, he needs to sort his act out a bit. It's, I think, about 400-odd minutes now without a goal. But certainly you would expect him to come through in the end, and I think that's all we've got time for this week, Barnes. Thanks a lot. Please head to the website sportsmole.co.uk this weekend. We'll have live coverage of all the big games in England and Spain. Barnes, thanks a lot, and thanks a lot to you guys for listening. See you again soon.